being 1 o'clock, I'm going to call this meeting of Labor and Industry, Finance and Policy to order. If people can quiet down so we can hear. People can quiet down so we can get our business done here. The first bill on our agenda today, before I do that, minutes. Representative Mecklen, you want a motion for the minutes?
I have read the minutes, Mr. Chair, and I move the minutes.
Representative Mecklen moves that the minutes from March 7th be approved. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. The minutes are approved. Now, the first bill on our agenda today is Representative Kraft's House File 2165, and I'll move House File 2165 to be in front of us. And I understand we have this oral amendment that was a minor glitch when they printed the bill up. And if you look on line 1.11, I think we have a copy of it in your... On line 1.11, remove the parentheses around the K. And I'll ask Ms. James, is that the proper way to say it?
Mr. Chair, I think it should be on page 1, line 11, delete 7671, parentheses K, parentheses, and replace it with 7671K.
What she said. So I'll move that amendment. All in favor of the oral amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment's on the bill. Representative Kraft, present your bill.
Do you have an A1?
We have a second amendment. Oh, there's a sticking together here. Didn't hear that. It's a good thing my hearing's not good.
Yep.
I'll move the A1 amendment, and if you want to explain what that does, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The A1 is as a result of some stakeholder engagement, especially with the Department of Labor and Industry, to put some things in there that they really wanted, and gets the bill in the form in which I would like it heard.
Any questions? Seeing none, all in favor of the A1 author's amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendments adopted. Now explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. It's great to be back here. This is a simple but really important bill. I'm sure many will remember the ozone hole that was being created by refrigerants in the late 1900s, threatening humans and really all life with harmful ultraviolet radiation. These were chlorofluorocarbons, or CFCs. In 1987, world leaders via the United Nations agreed to the Montreal Protocol that phased out these CFCs. This was the first UN treaty to be ratified by all countries and has been very successful. In fact, the ozone layer continues to steadily recover and is on track for nearly full recovery by 2040. However, what was transitioned to was hydrofluorocarbons, or HFCs. These, actually just like CFCs, are hugely potent greenhouse gases, hundreds to thousands of times more potent than carbon dioxide. In fact, according to Project Drawdown, quickly phasing down HFC refrigerants is the number one way to address climate change globally and could avert a half a degree of Celsius of warming this century. So there is a new generation of refrigerants that have as much as 75% less global warming potential than the existing generation of HFC refrigerants. Now, based on a 2020 federal law, we need to transition to this new generation, and we need to update our building codes to allow it. And the best way of doing this is to sync our refrigerants with the EPA list. So as new refrigerants are added, we don't need to update our code. By doing it this year, we're helping to sync up with states, hopefully all around the country, to facilitate an orderly and rapid transition to these new refrigerants. I will say that doing this in an orderly fashion is also just good for business. So with that, I have a testifier. I'd like to come up and tell you more.
I have my list, Chris Breeze. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Christopher Brzee. I'm a manager of government affairs for the Air Conditioning, Heating, and Refrigeration Institute. Thank you, Chair Nelson and members of the committee for the time to testify today. I am here to support uh, to, to convey AHRI's strong support for HF 2165. AHRI is the Air Conditioning, Heating, Refrigeration Institute. We represent more than 90% of residential and commercial air conditioning, heating, and commercial refrigeration equipment made in North America. We are also pleased to share with you that the HVAC industry supports nearly 13,000 jobs here in Minnesota and more than 570,000 jobs nationwide. The Federal American Innovation Manufacturing Act, or AIM Act, is phasing down the production and import of a class of chemicals known as HFCs, as you heard, which are primarily used as refrigerants in air conditioners and refrigerators. The EPA is in the process of implementing the AIM Act in a way that will guide an orderly market, consumer, and environmentally friendly transition to a range of new substitutes, refrigerants. U.S. manufacturers are already planning the transition to these new refrigerants now. The challenge our industry and U.S. consumers are facing is that many state building codes do not currently allow the use of certain substitute refrigerants, including in Minnesota. To date, more than 20 states have adopted changes to state building codes substantially similar to the language included in HF 2165, including in New York and Pennsylvania. Most other states are in the process of doing so now, and by the end of 2023, if not sooner, we do expect all state building code changes to be complete. The most important issue now is time. The regulations proposed by EPA will significantly restrict the upstream supply of HFCs starting in 2024. And in 2025, we do expect that the certain HFCs in most new air conditioning and refrigeration will be restricted by the EPA as well. What HF 2165 does is amend the state's building code to allow any HFC substitute that has already been approved by the EPA to be used in air conditioning and refrigeration equipment. If this change is not made this year, manufacturers will face significant risk of being unable to sell new air conditioning and refrigeration equipment into the state once the new EPA regulations are in effect. HF 2165 does not make any other changes to state law. The climate benefits of the AIM Act, as you heard, are considerable. The transition of HFCs down will reduce emissions by approximately 2.4 billion tons of carbon dioxide equivalent by 2036. So we do thank you again for the opportunity to present testimony at this hearing. AHRI looks forward to continuing to work with the Minnesota legislature to achieve both the economic and environmental benefits of the phase down of HFCs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brees. Is there anyone else wishing to speak on for or against this bill? See no one rushing down. Questions from the members? Representative Schultz.
Very good, Mr. Chair.
Brain's working a little slow this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Kraft. Would you say that the changes in our law with this bill would provide higher quality work and less burdensome regulation?
Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schultz. I think it certainly in terms of higher quality, in that going forward it does allow higher quality refrigerants to be put in place. I don't know that it changes the work that's required. And then your second part of that was?
Yeah, less burdensome regulation.
I think it's really no change in the amount of regulation. It points to a different set of refrigerants that are allowed or not allowed.
Further questions? Not? Looks like you're getting off easy today. I'll renew my motion. I'll renew my motion that House File 2165, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. The bill's on its way.
Thank
you. Motion prevails. The next bill we have, and I'm going to do some switching around here, is House File 2213, which is my bill. And Representative Byrd will take over the room.
Okay, the next bill on the agenda is House File 2213. Representative Nelson, would you like to move your bill?
I'll move House File 2213, and I believe this is, I guess, where is it? Where is this bill going?
It'll be re-referred to the General Register.
I'll move this bill to the General Register. I should have known that from looking at it, but anyway.
Thank you. Rep. Nelson, please explain your bill.
House File 2213 is a technical agency bill, and I have people here from the agency to explain the bill. Just make some housekeeping and technical changes to the construction codes and licensing bill, or statutes. And with that, I'll turn it over to my testifiers.
And whoever wants. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Sean O'Neill. I serve as the investigation supervisor for the Construction Codes and Licensing Division within the Department of Labor and Industry. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 2213, the Construction Codes and Licensing Policy and Technical Bill. I will be testifying specifically about three licensing-related portions of the bill. The first is a measure to speed up the timeline for retaking a license examination. The current statute or current language allows a license applicant to retake a license examination 30 days after the date of their failed examination. This measure would speed up that time frame to allow an applicant to retake a license examination after notification, as opposed to after the date of the exam being taken. The second measure in the bill, it amends the definition of a technology systems contractor in Minnesota Statutes 326B.31. This proposal adds licensed master electricians as a second type of license holder who may serve as a responsible licensed individual for a technology systems contractor license. Currently, only a powered limited technician can serve in this capacity. A licensed master electrician can perform all the work a licensed limited power technician can perform and more. So this is a common sense adjustment which has the support of the Board of Electricity. The third measure is a bill related which clarifies residential building contractor license exemptions. This proposal simplifies exemption language to make it clear that anyone who improves residential real estate with the intent of reselling does not qualify for the exemption and will need a license. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 2213. I will be available for any questions.
Thank you. Next on the list is Sean O'Neill. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Actually, my name is Todd Green. I'm an assistant director with the Construction Codes and Licensing Division at DLI. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 2213, the Construction Codes and Licensing Policy and Technical Bill. My testimony today will focus on sections governing the Board of Electricity, the Board of High Pressure Piping Systems, and boiler inspections. Beginning Section 3, Board of Electricity Membership Requirements, DLI proposes updating language defining the composition of the Board of Electricity so the board is balanced between employer and employee representatives, similar to many other boards. Section 5 is high pressure piping license reciprocity. This bill updates language providing for reciprocity with other states with respect to the licensing of high pressure pipe fitters. New language takes into account the Board of High Pressure Piping Systems must approve license reciprocity agreements and is consistent with existing language governing reciprocity agreements for both the Board of Electricity and the Plumbing Board. Section 6 is the Board of High Pressure Piping Systems membership requirements. DLI proposes updating language defining the composition of the Board of High Pressure Piping Systems to remove additional requirements for the two members who are journey worker high pressure pipe fitters, which are unclear and do not conform to the journey worker requirements seen in similar boards. Finally, Section 7, boiler inspection parameters update. Minnesota Statutes 326B.988A14 lists parameters that allow hot water supply boiler and or water heaters to be exempt from annual inspection requirements. A new interpretation of this statute has led to the devices being exempt from inspection that should not be and results in a public safety risk. This bill updates the statute to clearly differentiate the two device types, hot water supply boilers and commercial industrial water heaters, and place the inspection exemption levels for each in line with nationally recognized standards in other states. These devices are used in public buildings, and we must make this update to ensure they inspected when they should be. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 2213, and I will stand for any questions.
Thank you. Are there any other testifiers? Seeing none, discussion to the bill. Representative Meckland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Nelson, if I understand this correctly, on the residential part, basically this just removes the ability, if your intent is to flip the house, you have to hire licensed labor, correct? It changes it to that level versus if you're going to live there or then rent it out, but because you're basically then selling it to the open public.
Chair Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. That is the intent of clarifying this language, is to ensure that people fully understand. We do hear from the department, from building officials, permit technicians at the city level, in regards to this language would hopefully clarify that license requirement. And to get at your specific question, correct. If a homeowner is seeking to flip a home, they would need to be licensed and or hire a licensed contractor to do that work for them.
Okay. Follow up, Chair Mecklen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I wanted to make sure that was right. I did do a lot of those, and I had to repair a lot of the stuff that the homeowner did and didn't do right. So good language. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Rep. Nelson, any further comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. And I renew my motion that House File 2213 be referred to the General Register.
Chair Nelson renews his motion that House File 2213 be referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the bill is on its way.
Thank you. You can send me your copy.
Have the potential. Does it have like a potential?
No. Labeled as
Our author of our next bill is not here. I'm going to take a 5-minute recess just till she gets here. And with that, we're in recess.
She's representing another bill.
Oh.
You think Uber is not operating in Minnesota, right?
What?
5 minutes. Well, they did it to Uber, so why not do it to Uber too?
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
If she's presenting another bill in committee, then she's probably not responsible. I don't look at my phone when I'm presenting.
Yeah.
We're going to get restarted here.
Yeah, let's do it. You know, the conference.
Now that our research is back, I'll call the meeting back to order. Our author still is presenting a bill in another committee. Oh, here she comes. So let her get down to the table.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. I was told that you guys were not ready for me until 2.
Anyway, I'll move House File 2369 to be re-referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee. And Representative Hassan, you want to explain your bill?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to present House File 2369. Thank you to the community and the drivers who are here today. All I want to say to you is I see you, I hear you, and I stand with you. It's an honor for me to be the chief author of House File 2369, the Transportation Network Company Drivers Protection Act. This bill is about worker safety. It's about human dignity and respect for workers. It's about treating people fairly and paying them what they deserve. This bill establishes important protections for transportation network company drivers in Minnesota and ensures they have the necessary rights and benefits to perform their jobs safely and securely. TNC drivers are an integral part of our transportation system, providing a valuable service to passengers across the state. However, they have often been left without the same protections and benefits that other workers receive. This bill is a crucial step towards addressing that imbalance and ensuring that TNC drivers are treated fairly and with respect. Let me give you a historical context of why we're here today. It was about a year ago in the summer, Rep. Noor, Senator Fatah, and I were invited to a community meeting at Embassy Suites near the airport. That room had over 500 drivers who testimonial after testimonial talked about how they Uber and Lyft were charging them commission rates as high as 70%, that they felt unsafe, and that if a customer comes in drunk or disorderly or being very rude and disrespectful, that they can also report you to Uber and Lyft and your account will be deactivated without any legal remedies. There's no way for you to fight back. There's no way for you to tell your side of the story. You were the one that was, harassed, possibly injured, disrespected, and your account is deactivated because there is no remedies to have your side of the story being heard. We heard those stories. They were horrific stories. There were even folks who were physically hurt that came and shared their story. And what did we do? We did what good legislators do. We wrote a letter to Uber and Lyft and talked about, what was going on. Lyft sent us back a really nice email that meant nothing. Uber didn't send us anything, but they met with us. We met with their public relations person during summer, and I think Rep. Greenman was also in that meeting. And when we told them that people are talking about, commission rates as high as 70%, they said that's inaccurate. The highest commission rates that Uber charges is 19%. That was last summer. Ever since then, every time I take an Uber or Lyft, I ask the driver, I just paid $30. How much did you get? And I look at their receipt. The highest somebody said they got was $11. Mr. Chair and members, if you do the math, and I know everybody can do the math here, that is not 19%. That's way more than 50%. So that's why we're here today, because we have exhausted every other avenue to talk to Uber and Lyft. We didn't want the government legislating this. We wanted to bring all the parties involved at the table and say, hey, there's a problem here. folks are complaining about mistreatment. Can we have a conversation? And Uber and Lyft have not provided that platform to have that conversation and to talk to the people that work for them and figure this out without the hustle of going through the legislator. As you guys all know, we're elected by the people, so the people are here and demanding us to do something about this issue. With that, Mr. Chair, it's important that I note that this bill does not impact the food delivery companies. DoorDash, GrabHub, Instacart, those are not included. This bill impacts transportation, the TNCs, transportation network companies like Uber and Lyft. So I want to put that on the record so that I don't get tons of emails about this, guys. With that, Mr. Chair, I have Stephen Cooper, who's the lawyer for the association, who will just walk through the bill quickly.
And members, I have a list of testifiers here. And Stephen Cooper, you're the first on my list. And I'm going to go down the list. And members and the audience, we're going to take testimony till I've got a list here of testifiers. If we run out of time for the testifiers, we will vote on this before 2:30. And so with that, welcome to the committee, Mr. Cooper.
Thanks.
Please give your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much. My name is Stephen Cooper, and I'm here to give some information about this bill. An important thing for everybody to start with is to understand what Uber and Lyft are and what they are not. Uber and Lyft provides none of the money to run these organizations. The drivers do. The drivers pay for the cars, the drivers pay for the gas, the drivers pay for the maintenance, the drivers pay for everything. They pay for the insurance, they pay for everything. All Uber contributes is a software. And that software is the same software they use everywhere in the country. So their contribution is sort of like what normally a software company would provide. They don't have any of the boots on the ground. All of that comes from the drivers. Now, what we've seen, and some of it was mentioned, one of the first things we see is the drivers have to pay for all the insurance. Uber doesn't. Lyft doesn't. The other TNCs don't. And what's very concerning for that, and I saw the letter they wrote, and it's extremely misleading. Car insurance does not cover if you're beaten up or shot. Car insurance does not cover if you're robbed or injured. That doesn't come under car insurance at all. What has happened, and we have some of the people here, is many drivers, just 2 weeks ago, are robbed, beaten, injured, and not able to drive anymore. Some of them aren't able to work anymore. None of them get any compensation at all. And think about it. Can you think of many jobs that are more dangerous than meeting 6,000 people a year, some of whom are drunk, some of whom are high, some are just mean. They're just mean. And what happened when you're hearing about the disengagements is what happens is you can have a very mean driver, passenger, who doesn't like you because you have a disability, doesn't like you because you're a woman, doesn't like you because you're short, doesn't like you for any number of other reasons, including the fact that you won't divert from the path that you're supposed to go and pick up their friend on the way. And they report you, and then you lose your job. And what's important about losing your job is this isn't a job like I go to work for Target and I walk in. This job, to get it, you have to buy your own car to certain specifications. And these are people who are poor. These are not people who are really wealthy and say, I can go buy that car that meets your specifications easily. If you lose your job, what are you going to pay for that car with? What are you going to pay that debt with? What are you going to pay that cost with? Nothing. One of the really striking things, and as was pointed out before, letters were sent by the House of Representatives to Uber and Lyft, laying out these very problems, asking what are you going to do about it. This week, people have been, and when I was here a couple days ago, people were prevented from driving anymore without ever being told why. They have no idea why. When they do know why, they freak out and say, wait, that's not what happened. Here's what really happened. One of the things that this law requires is they must tell the workers what it is that they did wrong and give them the opportunity to be heard. That's not a very sophisticated requirement. It sets out what the rules have to be, and you have to follow it. And then there's a thing we'll talk about in a minute, which is a organization that Uber and Lyft will have access to that will make rules along with Uber and along with Lyft to how these procedures will go forward. Now, if you don't follow the procedures, if you follow the procedures and you do what's supposed to be done, you can still terminate that driver. But if you don't follow the procedures or you don't have any basis for it, you cannot. And if you do it anyway, and in some cities, thousands of drivers are gotten rid of. If you do it anyway, then there's a right to appeal. There's a right to say, hey, wait a minute. They never told me why I was fired. They never told me what the reason was. Now, one of the things that I thought was really striking about the pay, we all had the fun-filled opportunity to pay $4.50 a gallon of gas a couple of years ago, even maybe closer than that. During that time period, remember, every Uber driver and every Lyft driver has to pay that money themselves. But Uber pays nothing. If gas prices go up, Lyft pays nothing. If gas prices go down, they pay nothing. But you know what they did? During that time period, they cut the pay to the drivers. Here they are paying more money, significantly more money, and Uber and Lyft heartlessly are cutting their pay. One of the things when you listen to the fancy talk they give in these things and you read their letter, you know, I even saw their little threat thing. Well, if you do this, we won't be able to operate everywhere in the state. Malarkey. They have no cost in operating everywhere in the state. They want to operate everywhere they can because who pays for all that? The driver does. They already have their software. They're not buying the cars. They're not buying the insurance. They're not buying anything. What they're simply doing is making drivers cover that whole burden. That's an important starting point because one of the pictures they like to say is, oh, these are just some part-time people who are working a little bit, and that's who it is. Many of the drivers here from today have been working for them for 8 years full-time. It's their only source of income to support their families. And if they get cut, if they get disengaged, they can't pay those families, can't support those families. And that happens all the time without even talking to them. When you go behind the stories and see what leads to many of these complaints that Uber and Lyft never bothered to listen to, you see very many of them are completely illegitimate and have nothing to do with an angry passenger who got in drunk, who was told to stop yelling, or was told to stop yelling out the window, or sold in some instances told to stop trying to grab for the steering wheel, or stop trying to take over the driving of the car. Who gets disengaged? Not the passenger, but the driver. Now let's look at a couple other things in the statute. I mentioned briefly the insurance, and what one of the things it does is it shifts who has the responsibility to pay the insurance to Uber and Lyft. What business doesn't have to do that? How many of you own businesses or run businesses? You expect to have to pay the insurance for the things that are part of your business. But also, they have to pay the instrumentality of it. Can you imagine if you're a bus driver having to buy the bus or if you're a police officer having to buy the squad car? Can you imagine anything like that being done in other business? But one of the things that's really scary is other businesses are trying to copy this now. I've seen in the last year or two, they've been talking to lawyers to ask, how can we get into this gravy train where we no longer, you guys built up a lot of protections for people in Minnesota over the last 100 years. And those protections have made us one of the most successful states in the country because we have a stable economy, we have a stable workforce. This is sort of being destroyed. Now, the next thing I want to talk about very quickly is reimbursement of cost. And this is a compromise proposal. One of the proposals was that, hey, we should just make Uber buy the, or Lyft buy the cars, buy the things. We said, no, let's do this. Let's have them to reimburse you for part of your expenses. When we pay our taxes, 61 cents a mile is what we get paid if we're using our car in business. We say make it 31 cents. So instead of 62, it's 31. So that means that they're only being halfway reimbursed for that. Let's have them pay 10 cents a mile for gasoline. Now, how many of you think you can get a full tax? You get about 20 miles a gallon, so 10 cents a mile is about $2. Who here has bought any $2 gas lately? I don't think any of us have. It's $3, it's $3.50 or more. The other thing it requires is on the deactivations, as I already said, they have to follow reasonable, sensible procedures on deactivation. Retaliation is prohibited. Retaliation, discrimination are both prohibited, and that's new. And what do we mean by retaliation? What we've seen not only here but in other states, if somebody speaks up about what's wrong with Uber or Lyft, they have a real good chance of being deactivated because no explanation has to be given. And so they're gone. This prohibits that. Also, there's rewards given. What do I mean by rewards? If you say something I like, I'll give you priority on what rides you get. You'll get the nice rides. And this statute says no. You have to get them out equally, and you have to give them out fairly. Discrimination prohibited is, of course, something everybody should have, and it remains not just with drivers but also passengers, et cetera. And this was a very strong request from many people who felt that wasn't licensed. Now, if they don't follow these rules, the cities can revoke their licenses. The state doesn't give the license. The cities can revoke the license for doing that. Moving on, one of the biggest, the most important thing, Uber and Lyft keeps all the information you can imagine, and they need to charge their passengers and charge their drivers. They know where people were picked up. They know how long the ride was. They know where they went. They know what time it was at. But they give that out sparingly, so drivers don't know how much are we being paid and what are we being paid for. The transparency portion requires them to share that information with each driver. So if I'm Mr. Jones, I get to see what I did. If I'm Mr. Smith, I get to see what I did. And that allows us to know if we're being treated fairly. One of the big issues that arose over and over is lack of transparency, and you pointed it out at the beginning. They're telling the drivers they're getting a certain percentage. The drivers started asking the passengers, how much are you paying for this ride? And they found out what Uber and Lyft were saying was not accurate. When Uber and Lyft first came to town, they promised 85% of the revenues would go to the drivers. That was the promise they made. Drivers made a lot more money 8 years ago per ride than they make now. Since then, the compensation has gone down and down and down. Why? Nobody controls them. No, they can do whatever they want to do. And they say that in discussions. Now, let's quickly go through a couple other things, and that's the driver resource center. The driver resource center is an idea that we stole from other communities.
Mr. Chairman?
Am I out of time?
I'll stop if I am. 1 second. Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chairman, the testifier, although a very interesting testimony, I'm not sure who he represents. I'd like that to be announced. But with all due respect, we have 14 testifiers, and if each one goes on 10 minutes like you are, that's over 150 minutes. We will not be done on time.
I appreciate that. And I will stop.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative McDonald, he's the one for the attorney that's explaining the bill for the author. I'm giving him a little bit of leeway. We're going to hopefully he'll wrap up quickly here, and then we can get to our other testifiers.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I find his testimony interesting and good information. I'm just wondering who do you represent?
I represent the workers that
association.
Yeah, the Uber, the Minnesota Uber and Lyft Drivers Association. And just to say, how many of you are part of that?
Up. We need to have order here, please. I know you're all enthusiastic and we're here, but we need to have keep order in the committee room. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I just wanted to know your testimony is good information. I'm not dissing that whatsoever. But, Mr. Chairman,
I
hope that you have ample time for members here to ask questions. Everyone go on as long as this good testimony has been, we will not get done on time.
I understand that. I'm giving him a little bit of leeway, and not just hopefully, people coming up and testifying, we're going to try and limit it to 2 minutes so we can have questions. And my intent here was after he's done, because he's explained the bill, a short period of questions of this testifier.
If I have one more minute, I'll keep it to 1 minute because I appreciate you're right. I'm taking too much time. The last provision of this is what's called the Drivers Resource Center. And what the purpose of the Drivers Resource Center is to make all this work better. The Drivers Resource Center, 25 cents for every ride will go into a fund. And that fund, so there's no taxpayer number money, there's no TNC money. It's 25 cents goes into a fund. And that fund supports the Drivers Resource Center. They will work out rules and procedures with the TNCs to make these hearings go quicker and to make things be more efficient. And I think that's a minute. Thank you.
And with that, Representative McDonald, is there any questions from your side? Representative Schultz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just would ask that that given that there are other points of view, that especially the leading points of view in opposition to this would be given equal time.
I'll give them I intend on doing that of the people that are representing.
Mr. Chair, just quickly.
Representative Hassan.
Mr. Cooper was laying the foundation for this bill, so that's why I kept my testimony short so we can know what the bill is about. And I just want to put that on the record that this testimony was longer because of that.
I understand. Representative Hassan and Representative Schultz, that was my understanding, and that's why I'm doing this. And Mr. Cooper, if you want to hang on just a second, are there any other questions for Mr. Cooper before we go to other testifiers? If not, he'll be around at the end if there are questions. The next person I have on my list is Eid Ali, and I hope I pronounced that correctly. And if you want to come down and give your testimony, say your name for the record and then proceed. And if you can keep it, you can keep it short so we can get to the rest of the testifiers and get to questions.
Okay, I'll do that. My name is Eid Ali Yusuf, and I'm the president of Minnesota Uber and Lyft Drivers Association. I am the gentleman who organized this wonderful crowd here, my fellow drivers. And I'm also a driver, and I have been driving for Uber and Lyft since 2014. I'm also a family guy. I'm a dad of five kids. I depend on my main source of supporting my family is what I make or what I earn from Uber and Lyft. It was really painful for the last 10 years that I have been, I would say 9-10 years that I have been driving for Uber. In the beginning, it was reasonable because of the compensation was reasonable and I was able to provide enough for my five kids. But now, after 10 years, back then when they started, the compensation was $1.94 per mile. After 10 years today, the compensation is 84 cents per mile. And that 84 cents per mile is not going all to the pocket of the drivers. A percentage, which I will say about 40-50% of that 84 cents, 85 cents, will go into the driver's pocket. So that means even that 45-50 cents per mile that's going to the driver's pocket, it's not the net. That's included your gas costs, included your maintenance cost, it's included your insurance costs, it's included your telephone bills and everything. And probably you're going to end up, when you just kind of deduct from that, you're going to end up working 20, 25 cents per mile. That is not a livable wage. And I have a five kids. I don't want to go to the government and ask assistance. I want to work, and I want to make sure that I get a fair shake. I'm not asking to be rich for one single night. That is not the way, and that is not how it should be. I understand I'm a hard worker, like my other fellow drivers who are here. We are family people, and we want to provide enough to our families, and we want to work hard. We get up early in the morning at 4, and then we come back home with nothing. Basically, that is what it is today. And I'm sorry if I took more than 2 minutes, but that is my testimonial today. And thank you so much for giving us this opportunity. And I hope that you will just get our attention and create some sort of protection for those bleeding and wonderful, hardworking drivers. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. And you did, you're a little bit over, but not too bad. If we can all keep it to that, we can, that'll be great.
Thank you.
The next person I have on my list is Fee Clardy. Did I say that right? I says F.E. Clardy is what I've got on my list. I don't see anyone coming to the table. The next person I have is, what's that? Oh, next person. She was not able to come. Okay, thank you. The next person I have is Ansu Danza. And I, again, I apologize if I don't pronounce these properly. Again, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. And if you can kind of keep it into the 2 to 3 minute range, that'll be great.
All right. My name is Ansu Danza. I've been driving for Uber for about 9 years. I got a few things to say, but I'm going to cut it short, a little bit short. So recently, I pick up a passenger actually right here in St. Paul, downtown St. Paul. And we having conversation almost to the airport. I asked her, hey, how much did you pay for this ride? And she said she paid $52 and $52, over $52, but I would just cut it that way. So actually I didn't take her word for it. I took a picture of the of her screen to make sure it's right. And at the end of the ride, I was getting $9.67. So I called Lyft. I said, hey, how do I get $9.67 out of $52? And the answer the lady gave me was, you get your fair share. And you have the option to accept the ride or not to accept the ride. And my response to her was this: well, if I don't accept the ride, I get how you call it, my acceptance rate goes down. And that means I won't get good fare. So the last year and a half, I came from 99% acceptance rate, and now I'm at about 30%. And reason for that is because of they keep cutting more and more from our fare. So that's the final aspect of it. The next part was actually Uber. The first one was Lyft, the next one was Uber. I picked up somebody from the University of Minnesota to Blink because, you know, it was a busy time. They charge the pricing $137. Out of $137, I got $45.98. Again, same thing I did. I asked Uber, same thing. They said, oh, you got your fair share. That was done. But then the safety aspect is this. I pick up a passenger. I mean, I wanted to go pick up a Nicole. Well, it wasn't a Nicole. A guy came up. Well, I waited for him for about 15 minutes. So he came up. I'm like, oh, bro, guess what? I almost canceled your ride. But, you know, luckily he's here. But then he got a little aggressive, and he started using the N-word and other stuff like that. But, you know, one thing my dad used to tell me, he said, it's not all the time. You fight, even if you're right. So I let it go. He got in the car. About 2 minutes into the ride, he's like, hey, bro, can I talk to you? I'm like, yeah, go ahead. Can I apologize for what I did out there? I'm like, honestly, I was just messing with you. And he said, yeah, it was good. I'm going to say this loud. It was good that you didn't say nothing. You would have been killed. And I got 4 kids. About 5 minutes before that, I mean, like, not 5 minutes, like, an hour before that, I wanted to go see my kids, make sure they're okay, and then I came back driving. And emotion kicking. So I would have not just seen my kid if I would have just said anything to this guy. Never again. 4 girls, 13, and 4. So we don't have any safety nets. Even my car got destroyed, Lyft, I mean Uber, nothing, even today. So I'm asking every one of you guys to please look into the bill and accept it so we have some safety from safety and good finance, financial support to support our family. Thank you all.
Thank you for your testimony. The next person I have is Mariana Brown. And if you see me wave my hand like this, I want you to wrap up.
Hello, my name is Mariana Brown, and I'm driving for Uber with Lyft for almost 6 years. I was driving in New York first, and I moved here to Minnesota. But there's a big gap in what we have in New York. People will say that New York is a busier city, and it's more expensive, but to me, the hours we put out, the work we put out, the risk that we take with our lives, each time that we go out on the road at night, there's no guarantee we'll make it home. Sometimes we're on the road till 5 a.m. I'm a night driver, and I like to drive. That's why I do this. I have 3 kids. I have 2 boys in the military. So I'm doing my part for this country. And Uber is getting away with everything that we're doing right now, because at the point, no one is mentioning this. When we work for Uber, Uber take their percentage. Nobody realized that. Uber don't pay tax. When we get our form at the end of the year, we get 100%. We pay taxes. On the percentage they take, or a little portion, we pay tax on that too. They don't pay. We pay it. And it's hard for us to really say that. And some people say, oh, if Uber do this, we lose job, we lose work. But at the same time, we as people working for a job, nurses go on strike if something happened, and they're all going solidarity. And I'm going to give you an example. I pick up at MSP Airport, and I went to Gardenia, Iowa, 143.5 miles. It took me 3.5 hours to get there. You know what I got paid from Uber? $97.58. I have to drive back by myself. It's 7 hours. And my tank at the time was $75 to fill. What was left, it wasn't even enough for me to have a steak dinner. So I went out for 7 hours to drive, and I couldn't afford myself a steak dinner because I have to put money on it to buy a steak dinner. And I don't think that's fair, because we run that ride for free. Uber only pay us from drop-off to pick-up. I get pick-up sometimes 38 miles away, 45 minutes to drive there. They don't pay us on that ride. And then I take the person to the airport from Maple Grove, because I live in Woodbury, and pay me $30. I drove 70 miles for $30. Is that fair? So something has to be done. And at least in other states they pay, I'm almost finished. Other states they pay you from pickup after 10 minutes, they start paying you per mile per minute. In New York, they pay us $1.16 per mile and 42 cents per minute. After 10 minutes, they pay us per mile per minute. How can they cannot pay us here for long pickups? So we're wasting our time. You fill up a tank of gas every day, we have to fill up. Sometimes when I look at it, we make like $3 per hour. When you check it out, after all the expense come out, $3 per hour. Is that fair? No. Minimum wage in the States is like $15. We're working below the minimum wage. We are below poverty level. What can be done for us? So I'm asking you guys to think of this, stand in solidarity with us, and put this bill through. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Mauricio Costanza. Mauricio.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative McDonald.
While he's coming down, perhaps you could do an on deck, you know, the next person
who's
on deck.
Next one I have is Gari Abdi. Again, I hope I said that correctly. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, my name is Mauricio Rene Castaneda. Good afternoon, guys. My testimony is with Uber and Lyft, you know, working for 9 years. And when I started, you know, it was good. You know, I was taking money for my family, you know, support my family. But year per year, you know, Uber and Lyft, they was higher than the price, I mean, the percentage. And by now, you know, they taking more than 60%. So it's hard for me, you know, to feed my kids and my family, you know, with the money, you know, I mean, that they taking from each ride, you know. So I think it's 60% is too much for me, you know. I have to work 12 hours a day, sometimes more than 12 hours, you know. And I don't take money home, you know. It's hard for me to make money. Plus, we got the crime up there behind us, you know. Sometimes we don't know whose people we pick him up, because Uber and Lyft, they don't do backgrounds for those people like they do to us, you know. And sometimes we pick up a name, Pumpkins, name AJ, and we don't know who those people are, you know. And sometimes we feel scary because, you know, they talking about, you know, drug, they talking about and other things, you know, and we scary. It's so scary, you know, and we feel like they gonna pull a gun of you. One day they I took this person to downtown, and three kids, you know, they trying to take my car, you know. But I was lucky, the police was coming far away, and they scared and they ran away. But they took $20 from my customer, and they took $120 from my pocket. But I was lucky that, you know, I got an Infiniti car, cost me a lot of money, you know, I mean, to do the maintenance, to pay gasoline and insurance and car payment. So it's hard for me to make money right now, you know. I mean, Uber and Lyft, they go so much higher right now with that percentage, you know. So, yeah, it's hard for, I think, for everybody. Well, thank you guys for giving me the opportunity to talk, and have a great, nice day.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. After this, I've got Abdullah Abdi. You want to come down, come on down and be ready. And Do you want to give your name and tell us your name? You're next. If you want to give us your name and you can proceed with your testimony.
Okay.
Sorry, we have to translate. Okay. Both of these need translate?
You can actually sit here. I'll. That's fine.
We can pull another chair up there. Yep. It's Gari is first, and I hope I said that properly. And if you want to say your name for the tape.
Gari van kuira wa harajena ina sista hawiri magaaga markade.
Gari Abdi.
Gari Abdi.
Thank you, and proceed.
Wadu kuira.
Wa ina salama damir kora. Salamintin.
Hi to all of you.
Waha. Qoliya Uber ka waxa ka shaqeyn jiray odagayga ciyaalkayga aabahood Allah uu naxariisto waana lagu dilay isagoo Uber qof la dhahay soo qaad oo u sii socda ayaana lagu dilay qof isagoon gaarin
My husband who was shot to death used to be an Uber driver and I have kids of him from him so he was on the way to pick up someone a passenger unfortunately, he was killed and he passed away. He used to work for five kids, and at the time I was even pregnant for the sixth child at the time. While he was on the way to pick up his passenger, another vehicle who was driving someone who probably maybe was a criminal and was under the chase of police, kind of collided with the car that my husband was driving. He survived from the crash, but when he get out of his car and tried to run away, he died at the crossfire from between the police officers and the criminals.
Ilaa haddana wixii dilay waxana lagu soo gabagabeeyay inay tuugada dishay laakiin ilaa hadda wixii dilay si fiican anagana loogu ma xaqiijinin.
Until today, we don't know who shot him to death, whether it's the police or the other criminals, so we don't have any concrete proof of who killed him. And the people that he was working at the time, which is, I believe, Uber, didn't make any contact ever since that incident happened.
Ilaa haddana wixii dilay war uma hayno xaqiisii iyo xuquuqdiisii midna waa la anhaydhay.
Until today, we don't know who murdered him, and we didn't get any compensation of whatsoever about, I mean, that incident. That's it.
Thank you for your testimony, and sorry for your loss. And the next person here is Abdullah. And after this, I've got two people from Uber, Freddie Goldstein and Joel Carlson. If you want to come down after this, and then we'll hear your testimony. Mr. Abdi.
Abdi. My name is Abdullahi Abdi.
Thank you. Proceed.
So I'm.
And I got one. Uber and Lyft,
I drive Uber and Lyft both.
And if he wants to pull the microphone closer, that'll be helpful. Thank you.
I was an Uber driver for 6 years.
Uber offer you 10,000
I drove, or I just give a ride, probably 14,000.
26 people.
Thank you.
Uber Lyft, Hanukali, Afarkun,
And for Lyft, I gave a ride for
August 2021,
I was driving a car, and I had a passenger in my car, and then the passenger that I had in my car kind of tried to get my phone off my hand, and then what happened was that he just kind of hit a metal bar on my head, and that is the blood that you see is from that.
Okay, dibka I gaaray Uber baan gaariga u waday Uber wax xiriir oo ila soo sameeyeen male.
And that happened while I was driving for Uber, and no one contacted me ever since.
And meesha waxa uu gaarayna waa Rams County.
And that happened in Rams County.
Police baa ii imaaday, ambulance baa igu soo qaaday, baa ii isbitaal baa ii dhigay, saddex bilood baan jiifay.
I was transported in an ambulance to the hospital, and I was in my house for 3 months.
Qofkaasi idilay $4 baan ku soo iga siiyay oo ku soo qaaday.
And the passenger that I was serving at the time was only paying $4. That was a $4 ride.
Markii aniga laba dhibaato ayaa igu dhacday.
So I got two problems.
Midda koobaad Uberkii iyo qoladaan u shaqeynayay way wax xuquuq ima ayna siinin. Dawo ima ayna siinin dhibaato way igaadhay. Qodobka labaad waa dowladdii oon iyaduna inta ila soo xiriirtay oo la ii soo saaray Ramsey County gabar iyo wiil la ii soo diro iyagaa xuquuqdaada kula raadinaya iyagana u dambeyn markay dhigeen waraaqihii dhakhtarka noo soo dirtay lagu beygaaga lagu sii markaan usoo diray waxay u dhaheen ninkina waa la sii daayay oo 17 jir buu ahaa qeyngaar ma ahayn lacagna aan kaaga qaadnana ma hayno wax lacag ku siinaya male.
So the two problems that I have is one is that I wasn't compensated by Uber, and the second thing is that the government, it was in Ramsey County, and the government kind of sent me two folks to help me, and they told me that I have to bring all the paperwork, whether it's the medical bills and all that stuff. And finally they came back and said, with empty hands, and they said the person who hurt you was a juvenile, and there's no way that we can get any compensation for you.
garabka uu jaban yahay madaxana laba meel buu iga jaban yahay.
My arm is broken and my head is also got a laceration.
Dhibaatadaasi i gaadhay waxa weeyaan wax iga garaabay ilaa hadda ma hayo midaas midka intaa dhibaato dhibka uga baxo dhibka guud ee ay Uber nagu hayaan baan rabaa inaan haddana wax ka taabto oo saaxiibadii iga dambeeyana ila qabaan.
I'm just going to touch down a little bit about the general issues that we have, including
wrap it up here.
Waxaan ku soo xawaayeen Uber qof baan ka qaaday airport-ka waxaan ku qaaday $15 waxaan waday 18 mile qofkii asaga ahaa $15 baa la iga siiyay asagoo xanaaqsan buu ii soo galay lacagta iga qaaday fara badan ma wiil markaan weydiina wuxuu yidhaha konton baa laga qaaday anigana $15 baa la iga siiyay ninkana anigu ii haysta ayaan lacag ka qaatay.
I gave a ride to a passenger for that lasted 10 miles and then I got $15 for that ride, but he was mad, and then finally I found out that he was charged $56 and I get only $15.
Halka waxaan ku soo gabagabeynaya hadalka waxaan ku soo xiraya waxa weeyaan shalay waxaan joogay aqalka sare, maanta waxaan joogaa aqalka hoose hortiinaan fadhiyaa. Haddii xuquuqdaydii iyo xaqa aan leenaan Uber aan ka doonayna aan ka waynana berina waxaan tagayaa aqalka laga wadanka looga taliyo. Sidaa darteed waxaan ku talinayaa nimankan Uber iyo Lyft ma aha in lacag ku daraya lacag ka dhimala leeyahay. Nimankan waxaan idinka codsanaynaa inaad ka qabataan dowladdii iyo dadweynihiiba way ku ciyaarayaan gamcohooda laga qabto oo laga amni galayo. Nimankaasi waa niman caloosha usaqaan oo wadnis oo dadka kuwa dhibaatan lagu hayaa ummadda dadka Mareykanka dowladdii iyo shacabka iska horkeenayaan. Intaas aan ka codsanayaa.
2 days ago I was at the Senate and today I am here, and I want to let you know that if nothing is done with these folks, I'm going to elevate my issue to the I believe White House. That's what he was referring to. But I hope that you guys will do something about it, because this company is not a friendly company to those folks who are working for them. And you see my dress, I mean, that is enough testimony for you guys of what I went through. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Next person, and the next two people I got is Freddie Goldstein and Joel Carlson. And if you want to come down and together, and I'll give you a little bit of leeway here and give your testimony, and we'll get, we'll allow some questions.
Thank you,
after
Matt.
You're done, just
thank
like
you,
we did
Chairman.
With the.
Good afternoon, Chairman Nelson and Vice Chair Berg, and members of the Labor and Industry and Finance Policy Committee. My name is Freddie Goldstein, and I'm testifying today on behalf of Uber. I want to start first by just recognizing some of what we've heard today and say that I am sorry about the experiences you've talked about. That should not happen. We've been focusing a lot more as a platform on safety internally, but there's clearly more we can and must do. I also want to say, Representative Hassan, for whatever happened last year, if it was mishandled, I apologize for that. I moved into this role in the fall, and I would love to meet with you and work together. I started, as I said, in the fall, and I was on the ground here in Minneapolis 2 weeks later meeting with drivers. We've been talking a lot about safety and pay standards, and my goal is that we can come to some sort of agreement together. Put plainly, HF 2369 will hurt drivers, consumers, and the Minnesota businesses that rely on rideshare. If passed in its current form, the bill would make Minneapolis the most expensive city for rideshare in the country. It would make an Uber ride in Minneapolis about 50% more expensive than the same ride in New York City. We estimate that the cost of rides will increase by more than 2.5 times on average, and more than 4 times on some trips. These are not just numbers, they have real-world consequences. With such a steep increase in costs, even in the best-case scenario, we will see a decline in demand for these services. Our calculations show a decrease in rideshare trips by 65% to 75%. And this reduced demand means that less work for drivers. We estimate that we can reasonably anticipate around 7,000 drivers will end up leaving the platform. An unfortunate reality is that demand will especially decrease in lower-income communities, leading to decreased transportation options in less dense and less well-connected areas. With such a loss in both supply and demand, we will unfortunately have no choice but to stop operating entirely in some parts of the state. In areas where rideshare continues, customers will see much higher wait times in addition to much higher prices. While I believe what I just laid out demonstrates the gravest consequences, they are not the only consequences. The proposed requirements regarding our platform deactivation policy risks putting riders and other drivers at risk. Serious incidents like sexual and physical assault should be removed as categories for third-party appeals. No other state in the country has a mandated process whereby drivers can appeal deactivations for physical and sexual assault to a third party, following which a company can be required to put them back on the platform. We care deeply about our work in Minnesota and know that drivers are central to our success as a platform. We understand that drivers want predictable pay, greater pay transparency, and a process on deactivation appeals, among other things. As I mentioned, since December, I have been in active conversations with drivers to deliver on these things in a way that also protects their status as independent contractors, something drivers across the country say is critical to why they do this work. With this testimony, I respectfully ask that the committee reconsider moving forward with HF 2369, recognizing it creates a number of unintended consequences. Instead, we ask for the opportunity to come together with rideshare drivers. It's our strong belief that we can work together on a solution that is fair to drivers and consumers without putting the future of rideshare delivery, in Minnesota at risk. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Goldstein. Mr. Carlson.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I'm here on behalf of Uber, a company I've represented since they first started operating in Minnesota in 2012. I won't chase every rabbit. I disagree with much of what was said by Mr. Cooper about how this business operates, but I wanted to just focus on two things, Mr. Chairman and members. Number one, there is an insurance requirement in Minnesota in 65B 472. It is a mandate. It's a requirement. It's a requirement in every city where we operate. And to suggest that we're not providing insurance, I think, is unfair, because that's just not, it's just not true. And to let you know, the liability cap on that policy that we're mandated to provide is $1.5 million for an accident, the same as a limousine service. So we are providing that insurance. I just want the committee to know that. The second thing that I want to focus on, and I asked staff to put in your packets, the definition of independent contractors for Minnesota. This is something Representative Greenman and I have talked about on more than one occasion, because we appreciate that something needs to be done in this space. But we think the bill as written would make certain that the people who are doing this independent work right now would no longer qualify as independent contractors. And if you look at 176.043, which I think is in your packets, we think that the way this bill is structured, we would no longer be able to classify these independent contractors under items 3 and 5 for sure. And we have to meet, if you look at that statute, we have to make sure each factor is present. And so if we start compensating people for their time and the way the bill is structured, and we start providing reimbursement for expenses the way the bill is structured, they're no longer independent contractors. And I can tell you, for all the years I've been doing this work, the ability for drivers to be independent, to set their own schedule, to work when they want to work, is something they have communicated to me many, many times that they very much cherish. And so we think this bill as written absolutely drives a truck through that, and we think it's a step in the wrong direction. As Ms. Goldstein said, we think we can work something out, and we have worked things out with drivers in other jurisdictions. This one just isn't it, and I know through the many committees this would have to go through. The one that I haven't seen or heard mentioned yet is local government, because right now we do not regulate TNCs on a statewide basis, and we can have that debate. But right now it's all done at the local level. And so things that we have in our local licenses, Representative Jordan, like in Minneapolis, drivers are required to go to every part of the city. And if they don't, they violate not only the ordinance in Minneapolis, but they violate our terms and conditions for service on our platform. And so when drivers say, we don't want to go to that area, we can't allow that to happen. We can't do that discrimination, and we don't. And so there are things at the local level as well that are impacted by this bill that I don't think are recognized. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. We're happy to answer questions. We appreciate your time. We tried to be brief.
And question member questions, like we did with Mr. Cooper, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Carlson. You did answer some of my questions regarding the independent contractor. I think that's a very important element in our state. It allows all of you, and I'm self-employed myself, to be self-employed, to work when we want to work, punch the clock when we want to punch the clock, decide to work if we don't, we can go to our kids' birthday parties or whatever. That's the beauty of our independent contractors, and I think if we get in the way of that, it really could ruin the relationship that you guys have in being free and having your own business. So I appreciate that concern, and I hope the author will take that into consideration to heart when crafting the bill, because I don't think that would be the consequence. I don't think that all of you here would want to be then a part of a group that was told when to work, how to work, how many hours, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think that would be that would ruin really the relationship that you have now and the work that you can. So you answered that, and my comment was on that. Uber, Ms. Goldstein, the question of regarding, can you explain how the Uber drivers are paid, and then what they make and what Uber makes? Sure. And then my second part of that question, in the interest of time, is as far as the safety. Talk about the safety issues, what Uber is
Mr. Carlson mentioned about the $1.5 million insurance. If there's an incident, hopefully that gentleman that had the blood on his shirt was well compensated for the safety issue, but that's another topic.
Representative McDonald, the way I heard him, he wasn't compensated, and the lady whose husband was killed was not compensated, but that's Mr. Carlson.
I want to have Ms. Goldstein answer the questions, but just on that point, let's make certain that we're clear about what 65B requires for insurance. That is liability to third parties, right, an injured third party. So on the driver's side, when they say, you know, that the employee or employer didn't provide coverage for that death, then that's a sad situation, but that's not uncommon in any employment situation. So I want to make sure that we're clear that the insurance we're required to provide is liability coverage, no fault,
and the insurance
uninsured.
And the insurance part is Commerce. That's their bailiwick, not ours. And so,
Mr. Chair, if I could just have the answer of safety.
Ms. Goldstein.
Mr. Chair, if I might just clarify one thing on insurance very briefly. May I?
Yes,
Mr. Carlson is right that we do carry $1.5 million coverage in liability insurance, but we do also cover personal injury protection and uninsured, underinsured motorist coverage. So if a driver gets into an accident with another driver, the other driver's at fault and they don't have insurance, Uber's insurance policy will step in. We also would like to cover occupational accident insurance. As I understand it, Minnesota is one of 10 states that doesn't allow that, but that would pick up on a lot of these cases that we were discussing today. On safety, we have a number of features. Actually, just next week, we're going to roll out a new feature in Minnesota called in-app audio recording. So both a driver and a rider can turn on a feature inside the app to record when a passenger is in the car. No one has access to that recording unless there is some sort of complaint. If a driver feels unsafe or a rider feels unsafe, they can then submit that recording to us, and we can listen to it as part of our review process when we look at, you know, whether a rider can stay on the platform or a driver can stay on the platform. So that is one feature. We also have a bunch of features that we have rolled out, like the emergency button. So at any time, both the driver and a rider can click a button in the app that connects to 911, and we'll send 911 the name of whoever is pushing the button, where they are, their location, how to contact them, and we'll send help accordingly. We also have a feature. This is if your vehicle is stopped for some period of time. I've actually had this myself when I've been sitting in traffic. If your vehicle is stopped for some period of time, you will get a text message saying, we've noticed that your vehicle is stopped. Is everything okay? And you can hit a button to say, you know, not okay. They'll also start calling you if you don't respond to that message. So those are a few examples of things that we have tried to do to improve safety on the app. I think you also asked about pay and Uber's take rate. Pay is made up, the rate the customer pays is made up of a number of things. There is a minimum fare, so it depends on the locality, but it's guaranteed, every driver is guaranteed to make at least a minimum. There's a base fare where the ride starts. There's a per mile rate, there's a per minute rate. And then there are things like incentives that we do. So if a driver takes, you know, X number of trips in X number of days, they'll get Y additional dollars that week. And then we have surge pricing. So if there is high demand and low supply at the time, we will increase the cost of the ride to try to incentivize drivers to come out and drive at that time. Our take rate for the Q4 of last year in Minneapolis was less than 15%. I do think something that is getting confused, understandably so, when you hear about what a customer pays and what a rider makes, what a driver makes and what we are taking, is that there's also a separate category, which is what we take out of the customer fare to pay for this insurance coverage and to pay for things like government fees and surcharges. And I don't have enough copies, but I'd be happy to share after. I did bring an example of a receipt to sort of show how it's all broken out. And if there are specific cases that drivers are talking about, I'd be happy to take a look at those receipts as well and figure out what's going on there.
You can get that to our CA. We can get that to the rest of the committee. One more question, Mr.
Just last, yeah, just real quickly, Ms. Goldstein, regarding how does one Uber driver get reasserted back to the platform?
So
Ms. Goldstein.
Sorry. There is an appeal. There's a deactivation appeal center that you can access inside the app. I will say, I think we can do more there. It can be confusing and challenging. And I, you know, it is one of the things actually that I have been talking to drivers about working with a group on the ground to see if we can create a more streamlined process and one that is more friendly for people where English might not be their first language. But there is an in-app process where people can appeal. And we also do accept in cases of real safety concerns or failed background checks and things like that, we do try to let drivers know if they're at risk of being deactivated so that we can you know, try to course correct, because it benefits us to have more people on the platform.
Any question?
I just follow up, 10-second follow up.
Quickly, because we've got, we're running out of time here, and
we have seconds.
A couple other questions.
So I just think, Representative Hassan, your bill, if passed, House File 2369, would be, it would be then the most expensive in the nation to do Uber ride share. Now, we don't have it in my county, Wright County. I can't, I go on my Uber app, there's no Uber drivers in my district. But it's certainly when we go outside the district, this will affect many of my constituents and those who are drivers as well. So it would be, just for the note, we'd be more expensive than New York. And I think there was a testimony earlier, Mr. Carlson, or actually Goldstein, you said that there would be many drivers just wouldn't do it. Many passengers who accept this just wouldn't do it anymore if it's too costly. So that's something to consider. And especially Section 14 of your bill, collect your driver's resource center. You look at that section, that's going to be very costly, and that's on the taxpayer, not even the driver. That's all I have for now.
With that, Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will be quick because I know that we're running close to time. And appreciate the conversation. Again, appreciate, you know, in this committee, we really try to root this in the voices and the experiences of workers. So appreciate you all being here. Just a quick question, because sort of my understanding, you know, we're talking a lot about independence. I think that the issue of whether folks are independent contractors or employees, a company could offer the same independence and flexibility. It's really about what the company is doing in terms of paying for the social contract we have in America, wage and hour laws, overtime, Social Security and FICA score of taxes, unemployment insurance, and workers' comp all run through the requirement of somebody being classified an employee. I know that you talked about the things that are coming out of that fair. I'm wondering if you all are out of that fair, are paying, if any of that is going to the workers' compensation insurance or the unemployment trust fund.
I will have to get back to you on that. I don't have that information with me today.
Mr. Carlson, you.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, like, unless I need to be schooled, Representative Greenman, I don't think any people who are independent contractors, and I've been one since 1989, pay into those two funds. So,
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's right. And I think when we're thinking about this, we're thinking about the workers, but we also need to be stewards of the public tax payers and the revenue. When employers aren't paying into the UI trust fund for their employees, what it means is other employers who are actually classifying people as employers are. Same with workers' comp. So when we think about this, I think it is really important. We're listening to the experience of drivers. I really support this bill. And when we talk about how people are classifying workers in this economy, it's more than just the individual impact it has on employees, which it does. It's also about how it's impacting our coffers and what taxpayers are paying. So I really appreciate this bill. Thank you. And thank you for the indulgence on the questions.
Representative Schultz, and then we're going to see if we can get one more testifier from the Hospitality Minnesota. Representative Schultz, if you want to ask your question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the current testifiers. Earlier, we heard testimony, and I'll just state for the record, I, too, am an independent contractor, and I think that that's a really important way of doing business. But to this question, and I think that this is why it stuck out to me, in the earlier testimony, there was testimony that said that drivers pay taxes on the total driver fee, could our current testifiers please provide some clarity to that point?
Ms. Goldstein.
So I am definitely not an expert in taxes. I'm not looking forward to the next few weeks. We'll have to figure mine out. Drivers, do, you know, just like any 1099, when it is time to pay your taxes, there is some, you know, they have to work with their accountant and pay something on their wages. But I don't know what the percent is. It's certainly not 100%. And of course, Uber as a corporation does pay taxes.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Schultz, as I understand it, if you're an independent contractor, you pay both the employer and the employee share of the state and local and federal taxes. You pay your taxes on that. I kind of understood that, and I don't know if that was accurate, that they said they have to pay Uber share. I don't know if they're confusing that with the employer share, but as an independent contractor, you're the employer of yourself, and you pay your employee share that you would as an employee of a company, but you also pay the employer share.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your explanation of this. I think that was very helpful. There's a lot of concerning points to this. The testimony that I heard earlier literally said that you're paying the taxes on the totality of the ride. So it was like the total cost of the ride, which to me sounded a little bit beyond what should be.
Mr. Chairman, you hit the nail on the head. They get a 1099 for the income that they earn while they're driving on the app, and that is what they pay their taxes on. But we're not involved in that.
And this isn't the tax commander,
right?
But
now another stop.
I've had bills in the past on independent contractors being misclassified. So I know a little bit about it.
And Mr. Chair, before we conclude here, I'd like to request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested.
Thank you.
Will be a roll call.
Thank you.
And the next person I have is from Hospitality Minnesota, Jill Sims.
Mr. Chair, can you indulge us 10 more minutes? We have two more testifiers that
we
really want.
Get in. We've been granted until 45.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
But I'm going to try and get these, so if we can keep it short for those people. And welcome to the committee, Ms. Sims. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, members. My name is Jill Sims. I'm the Director of Government Relations at Hospitality Minnesota. We represent Minnesota's restaurants, food service, lodging, resort, and campground sectors. We appreciate the opportunity to share concerns with House File 2369, in particular in relation to food delivery, which as drafted is included. The pandemic restrictions fueled the need and demand for food delivery by our state's restaurants. To date, many of our restaurants are still seeing strong demand for meals at three or four times what they were doing pre-pandemic. As an industry, we recognize this is an important component of growth models for our restaurants and food service operators as they look to the future. As drafted, this bill could jeopardize that trajectory. In fact, one food delivery provider indicated customer fees could increase in between $9 and $14 per delivery, creating a barrier and burden that customers nor restaurants can bear. In particular, many of our customers are low-wage or fixed-income Minnesotans who rely on these services and goods and simply cannot afford such a dramatic increase in the cost of these goods and services. As we look to the bill language, we have specific concerns around the following. A package is not defined. This leaves a very broad stroke and inclusion of many industries. From our perspective, is it the intention to include provisions on every food delivery? Second, there is no clarifying language regarding in-house delivery drivers. For example, if you order pizza from your local pizza shop, are the drivers employed by the restaurant held to the obligations and duties laid out in the bill as a package or food was ordered through a digital platform? While this does not seem to be the intention of the bill, it does not explicitly exclude those drivers, and the language is not clear. We encourage the committee to review the language and account for the numerous unintended consequences of this language. One food delivery provider indicated that restaurants could lose $6 to $9 million in revenue per quarter. That's not annually, that's per quarter through that platform if this bill is passed as drafted. We've requested a meeting with the author. We hope to continue to get to work with the author on this bill and the rest of the committee members as we work out our concerns. And
Thank you for your testimony, and I want to hear you as the author is planning on working with you, and so thank you for your testimony.
Mr. Chair, whatever the author's comments were, number one, we didn't hear it, but yeah. It's more important for the record that we hear whatever the author just said.
Yes, and Representative Hassan, you want to say it into the microphone?
Mr. Chair, I was just sharing a conversation that we had that we will add an amendment, and I put it on the record that, you know, all the food industry is not included in this, but we will have an amendment in before this bill gets to Commerce. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Sims. The next person I have is Sueb Mohammed. And I hope I said that properly. And the next after that is Ahmed Ahmed. And then the last person I have is Maktal Abdi. And so if you want to proceed with, give us your name and then proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, my name is Sueb Mohammed, S-H-U-E-B, last name Mohammed, M-O-H-M-E-D. I'm from Minnesota right here, Drivers Association, and we represent the drivers. Our demand is to drivers get livable income and stop wage theft. We need a transparency from TNC companies. We need a minimum rate, minimum earning standard. We need stop deactivation. We need to stop rating or pointing. When you pick somebody, it will give you certain points. And then in America, we have different colors, different views, and different actual mentality. Once a customer asks you a question, if you reply him the way he wants, then he will rate you one or low. And then the Uber will deactivate your account automatically. So we need that rating point. It's really hurting the American families. We need that one to be stopped. And also, we need occupational insurance. So when you involve an accident or anything happen, we need insurance that will cover us. Also, we need a protection against discrimination, harassment. And also, we need drivers to be independent drivers, not actually to be a freedom and flexible. And you must pass the LIGMAT test so that you become a driver. In this bill, we have it. We really support the bill, but we need to do a little bit changes as a MERDA organization. To be an independent driver, you have to pay your insurance, your gas, and all that. But what we are demanding is a rate that you can pay all these bills. But once paying your gas car maintenance or something like that, you become a driver for them, and then they will control you. So we don't want that. We need to have our freedom and flexibility. To have that, we need drivers to meet with the LIGMAT test. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony. Ahmed Ahmed?
Yes.
And please state your name for the record.
My name is Ahmed, and my last name is Ahmed. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I also thank Representative Haldon for bringing this bill forward. First and foremost, I want to say I appreciate all the drivers that showed up today. I want to start saying that I definitely support this bill, and I share the gratefulness with all the drivers that showed up or spoke here, testified here. However, we want to be an independent contractors. I want to make that clear. We do not want to be a company employees. We want to have our freedom. We want to have our flexibility, and we want to have that with benefits. The benefits that we are talking about is such as occupational insurance, sick pay, and if drivers get hurt during working hours. With that in mind, I believe this bill really represents the drivers, us, but needs a little bit amendment to be amended into the into this way of not falling into a being a worker for TNC. That's the only issue we have on this bill, and I definitely support it, and we appreciate you for your time. Thank you.
And is this the gentleman that's on the list, Mr. Maktala Abdi? Okay, thank you. And if he can go quickly so that we can. And then Representative Hassan, I'll have you wrap up, and then we will take a vote on the bill. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
The chairman, thank you. My name is Ahmed Abdi Hussein.
Okay, go ahead. I'll translate.
Greeting to all of you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Manta waxaan halkaan u joognaa dhibaatooyin fara badan mid aniga khaas ahaan gaar igu dhacday iyo mid aan saaxiibaday la qabo.
Today I'm here to share my story with you of all the problems that I have faced being a driver for Uber and Lyft. There is a specific story I want to share with you about my life as well as the concerns that the drivers have.
And if they can go quickly so that we can get
waxaan bilaabay Uber iyo Lyft 2019.
I started working for Uber and Lyft in 2019.
And hadaan ku hormar aniga dhibaatadayda 2021 ki ayaan waxaan ka qaaday North Minneapolis ayaa layga soo wacay markii uu soo wacay aniga mid position ki aan ka qaadi lahaa passenger-ka nimba ii yimid ninkii magaciisan weydiyay
In 2021, I picked up a passenger from North Minneapolis. When the passenger approached me, I asked his name, and he said that he identified as that name. He entered my vehicle. Before he got into the car, he opened the driver's door and he held a gun to my head.
He
said, turn off your vehicle, give me your keys and phone. He said, get out of the car, and he shot me. Four bullets hit my leg.
Marka, meeshi waan ku dhacay, dadkii neighborhood-ka ba xabadii maqlay way ugu soo yaaceen. Halkan uu iga qabtay nin deriska ila ahaa suunkiisa. Police baa la wacay, police in North Minneapolis Memorial Hospital baa lay dhigay.
I was taken to North Memorial Hospital after a long charade of police being called and the neighbors helping.
Halka qalitaan maan ku galay haddana laba bilood kadib qalitaan kale waxaan ku galay Shakopee and San Francisco Hospital again.
And if you can wrap up after
okay,
this
intaas waa aniga dhibaatada igu dhacday Lyft markaan u sheegay arintiina Lyft waxay yiraahdeen anaga maada noo shaqeynin.
After I was out of the work for 2 months, and when I, talked to the TNC companies, they told me that you were not working for us.
Intaas waa dhibaatadeeda. Inta kale waxaan la qabaa darawaliinta iyo saaxiibaday baan la qabaa. Intaas aan ku soo gaabay, aad iyo aad baad u mahadsantihiin.
And everything that the drivers shared, I share with them. Thank you.
Representative Hussein, if you want, Hassan, if you want to wrap up real quickly, and then because we get to a vote here. Don't have time.
Mr. Chair, I will yield my time to Rep. Noor to close us out.
Quickly, Representative Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think this is something we've been working with the TNC, and you can see the letter from Lyft, which agrees with most of the things in this bill. So, members, this is a beginning point, and we look forward to the next iteration of the bill and supporting all the drivers so they can have a living wage. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members.
And with that, members, I'll renew my motion that House File 2369 be re-referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee. And
Mr. Chair.
Roll call has been requested.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Thank you. I just want to express and maybe make a motion that perhaps this bill should be laid over
We're already laid over
because of the fact that there seems to be a lot of issues, and some of the testifiers who are not even understanding the bill will destroy the independent contractor. So I don't think it's ready for prime time. And I'll further say that we, Representative Hassan, didn't even have a chance to even discuss with you personally, one-on-one, or as a group, about some issues, major issues in the language of the bill. You had great testifiers, and God bless all of them for the good work that they do. When I do take an Uber ride or Lyft, I have a good relationship with them, and I tip very well usually. Actually, always, because my wife used to be in the service industry.
Mr. McDonald, if you want to wrap
up. But furthermore, we didn't get a chance, Mr. Chair, to ask Representative Hassan important issues on the bill. We had so many testifiers that we had very, very little time. Now, when we were in the majority, we never did that. We always allowed enough time that the members of the committee have an opportunity to speak to the author regarding the language of the bill that we're supposed to vote on. I think it's irresponsible for that, and therefore I may make a motion to lay this bill over or move it to the next meeting, our next meeting next Tuesday, so we can discuss it further.
What's that? Representative, it has multiple committees that it has to go to and go through, and next is going to Commerce. We heard a lot about insurance today. That's Commerce's purview. And so a motion has been made, or a request has been made for a roll call. I've renewed my motion at the House that it gets sent to Commerce, and I'm going to ask the legislative assistant to take the roll.
Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Vice Chair Berg?
Aye.
Berg, aye. Lead McDonald?
No.
McDonald, nay. Representative Daniels?
Nay.
Daniels, nay. Representative Greenman?
Aye.
Greenman, aye. Representative Hill?
Aye.
Hill, aye. Representative Hussein?
Aye.
Hussein, aye. Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Jordan, aye. Representative Koslowski is excused. Representative Mekland? Mekland, nay. Representative Myers?
Nay.
Myers, nay. Representative Schultz?
Nay.
Schultz, nay. Representative Wolgamott is excused. Mr. Chair, at the conclusion of roll call, there are 6 ayes and 5 nays.
With 6 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails. The bill's on its way to Commerce. Thank you. And with that, members, we are adjourned.